Okay, we're now briefly going to have state representatives for three of the LP presidential candidates speaking briefly. The first one is Christopher Dosher, who will be speaking on behalf of Carl Persson.
Thank you. So I saw a study on the news the other night that said people make up their minds within 250 milliseconds. That's obviously come and gone, but hope you give me a little bit longer than that. I'm relatively new to the party. I was in Richmond last week, Manhattan last month. Met been fortunate to meet many of you since joining the campaign. The depth of the conversations I hear at these events is really impressive. You know what you believe. More importantly, you know why you believe it. That's a rare thing. It's something you should all feel good about. Now the importance of 2012 for the party can't be overstated. Libertarianism, as Carla stated, not the party itself, has the attention of the mainstream. We should take advantage of that. The party has perhaps its best chance to put itself on the map for good this November if we take the opportunity to show Americans that we have libertarian solutions to the issues that impact their lives. Jobs, housing, education. That's what Carl Persson's been trying to do with his candidacy. Now, before I get into the issues, I'll tell you a little bit about Carl. Carl's a U.S. Army veteran, maybe the only person who's both a Harvard Law School graduate and a high school dropout. And Bob, I don't think, believes me about that, but it's true. He's been an attorney and an entrepreneur for more than 40 years. He has a history of fighting for libertarian issues, such as ballot access, civil rights, and the end of corporate subsidies. He was a pioneer of the paralegal field and created another profession designed to assist the owners of small businesses. He was also the New York Party's nominee for Attorney General in 2010. Now, in Virginia last week, I did get the question, why is Carl still in the race? Well, very simply, it's because he's concerned about the economic future of the country, and he feels these issues need to be discussed. The economy and jobs are at the top of most voters' lists, whether you feel they should be or not, they probably will be. Carl's campaign is focused on job creation, but unlike the major party candidates, he's not promising to create jobs through tax cuts that do nothing or spending increases. He believes government would largely, if government removed itself from the picture, the economy would repair itself. Carl's plan has three elements. Other candidates have touched on some of them, but he's still the only candidate addressing all three. First, Carl would permit the nation's 26 million small business owners, maybe some of them are in here, 20 million of whom have no employees, to hire three employees free of all costs and taxes currently associated with hiring. Those requirements, if you're familiar with them, can add 20 to 40% to the cost of hiring and are an effective deterrent to hiring. Just this past week, a Gallup poll was released that small business owners showed that nearly half weren't hiring because they were afraid of new government regulations. Second element of Carl's plan would allow small businesses to advertise for investors. That's something a lot of people don't realize is illegal and has been since the 1930s. It's practice reserved for the few corporations that are publicly traded. Carl believes the practice can be effectively monitored by existing criminal civil penalties for fraud. It wouldn't need to be regulated. So the third element of his plan involves education. We can create all the jobs we want, but if there's no one qualified to fill them, it's not very useful. We need to get out of the mentality of the college for everyone. We've all heard the figures about the higher earnings of college graduates over the lifetime. It's time to ask if that's really necessary to promote a path that encourages students to assume six-figure debt under the false premise that they'll be prepared for employment. But as long as colleges and universities have unlimited access to government money in the form of student loans, there's little motivation for them to adjust their curriculums to produce students more prepared for the workforce. Carl would deregulate the licensing and accreditation process to allow businesses and individuals to start low-cost vocational and higher education programs. These programs would function in competition with one another and the state-funded programs that already exist. Now, of course, economic strength means little if our basic freedoms continue to be taken from us. We're at a point where simple steps Americans take to protect their families, storing food or purchasing a firearm, can lead to indefinite detention by the government. Rights are routinely ignored by a judicial system more concerned with obtaining convictions than justice. Carl would repeal the Patriot Act and end TSA screenings, robustly defend Second Amendment rights. He would end the failed war on drugs and prosecution of victimless crimes. It ought to end the Federal Reserve work to create sound currency. Carr would also end the government monopoly on legal gambling and deregulate the licensing process, which currently only favors a select few. Now, as I said, the Libertarian Party has a real opportunity to influence the outcome of the presidential election. And Carl Pearson believes that if we apply libertarian principles to the issues most important to Americans, the Libertarian Party will make an impact, and America will have no choice but to take notice. Take any questions? Do my best. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I initially, he was the first candidate that I really took notice of, and he was sending out these emails on a fairly regular basis every time something was...
Probably new, before I came on board, yeah.
His position on yeah. that and the other thing, and I thought that his ideas I thought were very sound, so I was attracted to him at that time. I'm wondering, how dynamic is he in terms of, as a candidate, as a, is he just a good thinker, or is he actually dynamic?
He's an intellectual guy, and his ideas are what's important to him. We're realistic about our chances of being elected president, but it's very important for him to stimulate discussion of these ideas. I know there were some missteps in the campaign before I came on board. There's nothing I can do about that now, but... He stayed in it. It probably would have been a lot easier to walk away, but he stayed in it because he thinks there does need to be more discussion of these
so
ideas.
So he thinks maybe if he doesn't get the nomination, working with whoever does, and maybe advising him on...
I think he'd certainly be willing, and he's actually extended... he has an open offer to any candidate to go and campaign for them and discuss the ideas with them, but I think he'd be absolutely willing to do that. He's within the next 2 weeks, he's going to be holding a forum in New York City to talk about these issues that I just mentioned. So it's probably an excellent chance to promote the party as well. Other questions? There must be more.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. One more thing. I have some informational packages. If you'd like one, I'd love to give one to you.
Hello. Represent Gary Johnson. Gary is a successful businessman. He started off with a little home repair business out of his home, built it up to a business of 1,000 employees. He then ran for governor and won in a state that's 2-1 Democratic, ran as a Republican, won and was also reelected. So served 8 years as governor.
What state is that?
State of New Mexico. And the advantage that Gary provides in that executive experience is that it shows an example to the broader electorate of what it means to govern as a libertarian. Not one additional cent of additional taxation in New Mexico was added during his 8 years. He left the government with a surplus. He vetoed over 750 bills because the legislature brought bills trying to favor special interests, favor specific people that were rent-seeking from the government. He used that power of veto, and that's a good example to show people that we will be able to do something if we obtain the presidency. Now, the reason I got involved was I was attracted to Gary's strong commitment to the free market. He's absolutely opposed to crony capitalism and the form of corporatism that has run rampant in modern America today. We have, he opposed the bank bailouts. And, it's one thing to say there would be systemic risk if you have this. But the people that were relieved of their, who were bailed out, were the very people that caused the problem. And we had the same problem with the auto bailouts. We're picking winners and losers, and Gary has specifically stated that's what we need to stop doing. We need to stop allowing government to pick the winners and losers, allow a true free market. bailout of the auto companies, you know, they're trumpeting it as a great thing right now, but all it did was favor one group, primarily the employees and the labor unions, over the bondholders. He opposes Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, wants to end them. We've got to get American government out of the mortgage, the backing of mortgage paper in America. Civil liberties. He got the highest score of all of the national candidates by the ACLU. Higher than Ron Paul, higher than Barack Obama. Ron Paul was ahead of Barack Obama. He wants to repeal, wants to repeal the Patriot Act. He wants to restore habeas corpus with respect to the claims of terrorism. He opposes the National Defense Authorization Act and its ridiculous premise. I mean, about the most anti-libertarian premise you can have is that we can lock up Americans without any recourse to the judiciary. It's just ridiculous. And it's all in the name of national security, safety, fear-mongering. He wants to end the drug war. He doesn't want to just decriminalize marijuana. He wants to legalize marijuana. Big difference. And that legalization will never be, there will come some regulation, which may or may not be, you know, depending on your variation of libertarianism, the pure libertarianism. You'll regulate it so that you can't drive while on pot, or you can't give it to children, they can't sell it to children, but adults will be able to buy marijuana. They want to treat it just like wine or alcohol in that same degree of regulation. There's a recent initiative out in California about treating marijuana like alcohol. He supports marriage equality. He wants government out of the business of marriage entirely. He used to be civil unions, but now he does favor marriage equality. He opposed that "Don't Ask, Don't Tell" when before it was repealed. Sometimes he goes further than the Constitution in his libertarianism. For example, the Constitution explicitly gives the power of the government to exercise eminent domain. Gary says, I may have that power to do it, but I don't want it. I don't like it. I can't think of a reason to do it. We have Yowie Town Hall. They're online town hall events. They're once a week. You can always log on and ask Gary questions. And we get young people asking questions. Well, one of the questions was, do you believe in eminent domain with respect to giving, taking away property and then giving it to private developers? Well, that's an easy softball question. But Gary went much further and said, no, I don't believe in any form of eminent domain. I may have that power. I don't want to use it. And he supports the separation of church and state. Another strong libertarian message that I think works well with the broader public is his premise that good government is easy. And he relies upon the way he governed in New Mexico to demonstrate that. Starts with fiscal responsibility. And, you know, we've already heard with Carla's speech about, you know, the massive debt that we're facing and the corrosive effect of constant deficit spending. Gary Johnson wants to balance the budget in the first year of his presidency. He wants to have a 43% reduction in spending. Those are two slightly different things. Just imagine what kind of diminution of government you will get with a 43% decrease in federal spending. Now, it's not across the board, but it does include the military. And he has explicitly stated that you will have 43% decrease in military spending. So you attack the spending side. But then your question is, well, what about the I might have misspoke. You attack the spending side. What about the income side? He wants to eliminate the personal income tax, personal income tax. Wants to eliminate the federal estate tax, the death tax, the corporate tax, the capital gains. Now, how is he going to get that money into the government? Well, he does propose what's called the fair tax. It replaces all federal taxation with a state national sales tax. Now, that would have a big disruption in the way that we're used to dealing with government. But the huge advantage of that tax for libertarians is that income taxes allow government officials to provide subsidies, choose the winners and losers, very far away from the political process. Very few people pay attention to the details of either the Budget Act or the specific tax code provisions. It's very easy for government to constantly be picking those winners and losers, avoiding the free market with our income tax system. That's very difficult with a flat, absolutely flat tax based on consumption. And so it takes politics out of the economy. Is it perfect? No. No tax is perfect. But we are going to have to fund our government in some way. If we can get it reduced by 43% in the first year, I'll be dancing. Some people on the Yowie town halls have said, okay, but you'd never get that through Congress. And he said, I would veto it. Let them come and override my veto. I'll still get a better result than I would have gotten if I don't do anything. And it's that kind of dedication to showing people how to govern and how to make it good government that I respect. He believes in state rights, supports getting the federal government out of education. National defense. He's opposed to the Iraq war, wants us out of Afghanistan, opposed the Libyan operation as an absolutely perfect example of unconstitutional use of military force. There was absolutely no authorization for that, and that's the kind of use of force that we have got to end. He opposes intervention in Syria. He wants to close down foreign bases. They're no longer needed to directly provide for national security interests. He's really targeted Europe as a primary example of that. Finally, let me just end up with the campaign itself. Gary, from the very beginning, the whole national team has been very dedicated to, we're going to help build the Libertarian Party in this campaign, build the state parties, and help what are generally described as down-ticket candidates, anybody running for Congress, Senate, to integrate with those campaigns, to work hard to build up the Libertarian brand. He has said that he is not returning to the Republican Party. He's also said recently on a Yowie Town Hall event that this might take 8 years. Mitt Romney ran for president for 8 years. I may have to run for president for 8 years. That might be what it takes. So the game plan is to build up enough exposure. We're polling in the PPP poll at 7%. We need to get to 15% in order to be invited to the national debates. So that's our goal. Get that exposure up to 15%, because once you get into the debates, that's the game changer. The game changer, because it broadens the focus to the broader electorate, gives it an opportunity to fully explain without a media filter, and I think that provides him the best opportunity for winning. And I take any questions. Sure.
I was looking at the Project Vote Smart website last night.
The which one?
Project Vote Smart.
No, not. But
it's a nonpartisan one that tries to give unbiased information about candidates. And they talked about all the presidential candidates they were aware of. The only libertarian, apparently, they knew of was Gary. And none of these candidates, according to the website, was willing to take what they call the political courage test. And I was wondering if you could comment on that.
As it, you mean, Governor Johnson hadn't taken that test?
Yes, he had refused to or something.
No, I really can't comment. I don't know the particulars of why he didn't or chose not to respond to that. I know that there's an evangelical group that kind of runs a similar website, and very many of the candidates didn't respond to that either. I don't know why.
Well, if you're not familiar with those parts, then it's difficult for you to do this.
I can certainly pass that up the chain. Mark.
Until the primaries for Republicans and Democrats were over, I was not permitted to take political experience as a libertarian. So, and Project Coast Guard is a great site. It's not run by a fringe group. It's fabulous. But some people who are listed on there as not having taken the test are in fact not permitted to do so until the primary season.
Okay, so it's a misnomer. They haven't taken it, but they haven't been able to take it.
I don't know the specifics. Well, that's the way it was 2 years ago. Yeah.
2 years ago, the deadline for congressional candidates to send it back to the second week of
September.
Yeah,
slightly. Okay, so then I withdraw what I said.
No, but it's nice to hear about it, because then I'll direct that up to media relations person, Joe Hunter. Yes?
I know you mentioned this earlier, but could you reiterate Mr. Johnson's position on same-sex marriage?
He supports getting government out of defining the marriage, what marriage is. He wants religious institutions to do that for them, but he does not want government defining what is or what isn't a marriage. And so he wants true marriage equality, in that the government won't say what it is one way or the other. Now, that may allow for some churches to allow for gay marriage, but others may not.
Any other questions?
Sure.
I'd like to introduce Lorenzo Gastagnaga, speaking on behalf of the League Rights Campaign.
Thanks. Hi, folks. You know the old saying about you can't pick your family, but you can pick your friends? I pick my friends carefully, and Lee Wrights is my friend. I've known Lee for about a decade. Lee is truly a libertarian in my book, and he's the only candidate for peace that I know of, because he really understands that what we have here is a war against people here and a war against people overseas as well. It's not just a war on drugs or prostitution or other crimes that don't have any actual weight. He believes that stuff in his fiber of his body. Lee, of course, doesn't have the national stature of Governor Johnson, nor he might have any great national stature anywhere at all. But Lee is a man who knows how to carry out the libertarian message, which is really the message of peace. If you look at everything Carla Howell was talking about, the debt and everything else, well, this war is actually a war that is costing not only lives and liberty, but money, all of them. The war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, all the bases throughout the world, the war on drugs, everything is really about the war and the fact that it has to be peace. And we need a national leader that will put that front and center. It's all very good to talk about the details. The details need to be talked about. But you need somebody with a heart and the endurance that Lee Wrights has. How do I know that? I remember when Lee, not having a car, yet serving at the LNC, the Libertarian National Committee, would get on a Greyhound bus or a Trailway bus and travel across states to make it to the meetings. I call that endurance. That's the kind of endurance that a Libertarian president would need to have when he stands in front of Congress, probably a Congress that would have it shot rather than anything else. And he would stand up and tell the truth. And I know that Lee will always do that. That's why Lee is my friend. And I really think that Lee should get the Libertarian Party nomination this coming year. And don't forget, it's Wrights, W-R-I-G-H-T-S. Thank you.